Welcome to Stargate SG-1 for the first time still. Not a Star Trek podcast. My name is Jeff Aiken, and I'm watching Stargate SG-1 for the first time.
And I'm Brent Allen, and I'm watching Stargate SG-1 for the 47th time. But for the very first time, I am watching this series, dissecting it for those messages. I'm doing the podcaster thing. Messages, the hope of the future. Mirrors to society. How do we be better people to each other? That's what I'm watching Stargate SG-1 for the very first time for this time.
All right, Brent, heads up to everybody watching right now. We decided to watch some episodes out of order. Mm-hmm. Brent assured me that there's no spoilers, nothing I'm going to miss.
There's none.
So last night we recorded Enigma.
Yes.
Now we're going back to Singularity.
Yes.
So there's just going to be some weird in the rankings, some other things. Just know it's all fine.
It's all fine. Yeah, because honestly, we thought that you would be gone.
Exactly.
And then we had some extra time. And then technology took some of that extra time.
Yeah. So good stuff. So let's not waste any more time, Brent. Let's get into it. The episode we're watching is Singularity. Why don't you tell us about it?
Sure. The episode is called Singularity.
Yep, we got that.
All right, let's go.
I think the air date's
about all it is.
You already told me. Spoiler alert. He told me the air date.
The air date is Halloween. This is a Halloween episode. I always think that Hathor is the Halloween episode because it feels like it should be. Mm-hmm. But no, this is actually the Halloween episode, 1997.
Cool.
Keep this in mind as you watch this at the end of the episode. They're going to go on a break after this episode.
Okay.
For quite a while.
Really?
Yeah. And then.
So this is like the mid-season break
what
for
they're,
them.
Yeah, this is what they're leaving folks
They're going on. Out this, on this note. One.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, this is the note they're going out on. So with that, let's go ahead and jump into today's episode. If you're new, because every episode is somebody's first episode, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. The way this works is Jeff and I are about to watch the episode Singularity together, and we're going to do it right here. Live together. And if you're joining us on Patreon or YouTube, you're going to get to watch us do that for the full unedited version, though. That's Patreon exclusive. So make sure you head over there, patreon.com or Babylon 5 first, or check the link below for updated URLs as things get changed.
If you're listening on an audio app, if you're one of our incredible listeners, you are going to jump to the end of the episode. So when we come back, you're going to hear my for the first time reaction, and you're going to hear any of the sci-fi messages that Brent did or did not find in this one.
Fair.
Let's not waste any more time, Brent. Let's kick it off. Singularity.
Chevron 7 locked.
It's a normal, regular, ordinary mission for SG-1. They're on a planet where SG-7 has already visited, made friends, and even built an observatory. It's from here that Sam plans to watch a bunch of space stuff spin into a black hole. Cool, right? Except things on the planet are most definitely not cool. They come across a dead body, died from an apparent disease. Jack orders everyone into their portable, pocket-sized hazmat suits. They begin to explore and discover that everyone, including SG-7, is dead. They go through all the quarantine and decontamination procedures, even questioning if they themselves were responsible for the disease. But that conversation is quickly set aside when the team discovers a little girl, alive and seemingly very well, outside, hiding in the bushes. Teal'c does his best to look friendly, and the team takes her back to the HQ. She's not really very communicative, but Dr. Frazier examines her and finds her to be in perfect health, but also notes that she has traces of Naquita in her blood, which may account for why she's been able to resist the disease. Wait, hang on a moment. Isn't Naquita that weird metal that the Stargate's made out of? Yep, sure is. Okay, well, that's strange, but not so strange. This little girl is scared, needs a hug, and she needs that hug from Sam. They bring her back to the SGC, and she's pretty stuck at Sam's side. While the grown-ups talk, the little girl decorates her room with all sorts of paintings. Paintings of death and destruction and dismemberment. Okay, now that's really strange. The girl, who we find out is named Cassandra, doesn't want Sam to go. But also, she has this weird pain and she passes out from very low potassium levels. While they try to get that up, Dr. Frazier runs some more tests and she discovers a device that is attached to Cassandra's heart. That's the Naquita. And when that Naquita comes in contact with potassium, you know, the normal stuff found in a human body that Cassie's body has been depleted of. Yeah, when you mix those two things together, big, big boom. It's a radioactive boom at that. It doesn't take too long to follow the logic that Cassie here has been altered by the Goa'uld and is being used as a bomb, presumably to destroy the Stargate and the SGC and anything else on Earth that it can take with it. But there's only a little less than 2 hours before the big boom happens. Hammond orders the girl sent back to her planet, but before they can complete the dialing sequence, the gate is opened from the other side. It's Jack and Teal'c who are returning from Cassie's home planet, where they've just been under attack from the Goa'uld Nirti, whom Teal'c relays has done this kind of thing before, so they can't really send her back. Not now. But what do you do with an atomic little girl who's about to go boom? No matter how sweet and innocent she is? Well, you lock her in an abandoned nuclear facility and contain that blast, of course. Cue all the emotional tears that only a heartless, emotionally void person like Jeff could resist, and Sam makes the decision to stay with the girl, even if it means sacrificing herself. The time ticks down. 3, 2, 1, 0, and like Y2K, nothing. Sorry, Ivanova. No boom today. Sam explains that she just knew. She didn't know how, but she just knew that Cassie would not explode and that she'd be safe taking all the teeth out of her sacrifice. Well, with all of that wrapped up now, the only business left is what to do with Cassie. The thing in her heart is going to go away, so it seems she'll be fine and live a long, happy life. She's going to go live with Dr. Frazier because, frankly, it's a horrible burden to add a kid to the full-time cast of an adult sci-fi show, and Jack even gets her a dog, as long as she promises to keep the Stargate and her alien status a secret. If anyone asks, she'll just say she's from Toronto. Plenty of weird people from there, eh?
All right, Hefe. So that was Singularity. You took a lot of notes, a lot more notes than I thought you would.
Well, I was thinking about how I've been developing this new note-taking discipline, and I totally disproved that in this one. And I'm going to show that I don't need them because I'm barely going to reference these things.
Okay, cool.
I ranked Cold Lazarus, I think, in the number one spot for a minute. Nope, number two spot. I think I started at number two. It's like it's sitting at number three right now. I said that it's an episode I never want to watch again, but it made me feel.
Okay.
And it touched me in a pretty profound way.
Yeah.
You, I don't know if it was intentional or not. Like we talked about earlier, this we'd had a lot of time to kill as we were getting this thing set up. Really put me in this false sense of like, all right, this is going to be some stupid episode. And it kind of started that way too, of like, okay, we're going to talk about black holes and we're going to do
black holes. And oh, there's the dude with the disease again.
Dude, we got so much in this one, right? So yeah. I'm not even going to touch the Cassandra stuff yet. What we got, we learned about what the Stargates are made of.
Nakwida.
Mm-hmm. I got to get used to that. So that's fascinating.
Yeah.
In and of itself, the one that we know it, and now we know
so it. So Nakwida, I don't recall if they named it, but the people that Raw had taken from Egypt and put on Abydos.
Yes.
They were mining Nakwida.
Okay.
That's what they were doing.
Were they mining it on Earth or?
No, on Abydos.
On Abydos.
They were mining it on Abydos.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So for me, I just learned that. So that's pretty fascinating. We met we got introduced to a new Gould.
Nirti.
Mm-hmm. And I found it fascinating and it made sense. Like the note I took was, okay, so Nirti's up there. We saw, a Gould ship up in space, which is kind of cool. But Nirti is an enemy of Apophis.
Yes.
So I made the note. I said, is the enemy of our enemy our friend, or do they just straight up hate everyone?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is they just straight up hate everyone. But it's fascinating. At some point, like you can see this growing. This season, Apophis has been our focus.
Right.
But who's next? Or who's going to join up? And who's going to all this stuff? They all have the same goal of taking Earth off the board. And then the big stuff. So the Cassandra stuff started.
I want to go back to the Nirti thing just for a second.
Okay.
I've never noticed this before. We'll meet Nirti in a future episode. Mm. Nirti is a girl.
Okay.
She's a female, at least her host is a female Gould. Assuming that like most Gould, she has had this host for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
Teal'c called him a he.
Really?
Teal'c referred to him as a he in this episode. Yeah.
I wonder, that's a thing, right? Like, how are Gould gendered and does it matter what their host is and all that?
I can answer that. Well, because of Hathor, there are queen.
Mm-hmm.
And even with, from Children of the Gods with Apophis, here's me, here's my queen.
My mate.
So the Gould themselves do have at least, well, I don't know. Because here's what I can tell you. If the Gould have gender, because it's possible that it just could be, because like I think with bees, isn't it like everyone's a male
until
there's a queen, mm-hmm. and then one turns into a queen?
I think so. Yeah.
Right. That could be the way it is with the way Ghoul. They're okay. all a single gender until somebody has to become a queen, and then they roll over and become a queen.
Yeah.
It does not matter though what gender of a host they take.
Okay.
So you could be either.
So you can get the whole Trill experience of being, you know, one time I was a mother, one time I was a father.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Before we gate into the rest of this episode, did you know you're missing most of the content from this podcast? Stargate SG-1 for the first time has an active and exciting Patreon that you can join right now by clicking the link in the show notes. Not only will you get access to the full, unedited podcast and reaction videos, you'll also be able to join a growing, vibrant, maybe even an intergalactic community. Subscribers even get access to all of our content from Babylon 5 for the first time. Don't miss out on this content and the amazing people. Just click the link in the show notes. Tilk thinks you should do it right now.
Indeed.
Right, except I think with the Gould, in general, they try not to change hosts too often.
That's what they have.
Which I think may be more of a convention for the storytelling on the show, so that we know who's who.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, they just be hopping host all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a convention for the show, but it also makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, this is who I am. This is how I present. They have that sarcophagus technology.
And you also saw how picky they were about finding their host.
Yeah.
Like,
you get the right one, you want to hold on to it. So the Cassandra thing started off, and I was still in the mindset of like, this isn't going to be such a great episode. And my first kind of instinct was, oh my gosh, a kid. Very rarely in sci-fi does a kid value add an episode.
Which, by the way, I know I made a little bit of fun. That is exactly why JMS has his policy of no cute kids.
Yeah. It's not, you know, I think about Jay Gordon, you know, in Disaster. Mm-hmm. Like, put it in weird dirt. Yeah, it doesn't. That's not good. Just stop. Yeah. The kid in Battlestar Galactica, like in the miniseries, they even had the kid, you know, from there. And then they're like, yeah, no.
Pretty much every time they had kid on Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Just
not good.
Yeah. Molly wasn't good. The kid that lost his parents on TNG. The kids when they reverted.
Yeah.
You know.
Not good. Yeah. So it's like, okay, we're gonna do this thing. And she doesn't talk, and she's, you know, all my people died in tragedy and all this stuff. It turned around quick, though. And I want to take you through kind of my journey in this episode. Was mm-hmm. I started there, and then she connected. I was, before I go into my journey, Tilk is the one who pulled her out of the brushes. And I was expecting this, like, hilarious, like, fish out of water. I'm Tilk Jaffa, very hardcore, and now I need to pretend that I'm soft to convince this child to come out. But no,
yeah,
he really was.
Yeah.
He melted. I bet that Ryak's got the best dad.
Yeah.
When he was a kid and stuff, that had to have been awesome.
Well, you and I were joking the other day, and I really wish we were doing it on mic, so I'm going to do it right now. Tilk abandoned his family, mm-hmm. left them for poverty and for,
they were shunned.
Outcast, mm-hmm. shunning. Still a better father than Worf.
Yep. Dramatically better. Like, so true.
Still a better father than Worf.
So at first I was disappointed that there was this apparent handoff from Tilk to Sam.
Yeah.
I was like, ah, we're not going to see the Tilk stuff. That changed fast.
Yeah.
Watching the bond between Sam and Cassandra was beautiful.
Yes.
It was so well done. I don't know this. I don't know if you know this, but Amanda Tapping has to have been a parent at this point in her life.
I do not know if she was or not.
As an actor, you tap into your real life experiences to express that she was a mom. Like that was parental what she had going on. And if she wasn't a mom, oh my God. So good. I was drawn in. I was sucked in. When we were watching the episode, we talked about how as parents, mm-hmm. this became excruciating mm-hmm. to watch. And so much of it was Sam. Now, the kid who played Cassandra did a great job in playing the role she needed to. It was believable when, you know, she held on to Sam and wanted her to stick around. When she said, you know, at the end, you know, I love you. It was, she wasn't an amazing child actor, but she was totally adequate.
Right.
And working with Amanda Tapping elevated the whole thing. the episode tried to take us for a ride that this little girl basically had a mega bomb inside of her.
Right, right.
That was going to blow and take out at a minimum the facility and quite possibly the entire world. And all the way up to the end, right? You've got Jack over here still kind of being a hero. I'm going to stick around, but not really stick around. Amanda decides to go and be with her while they literally lock her in a vault to let this little girl blow up, which sounds heartless, but it would save so many people.
I want to answer the question you just asked because I was looking it up. I was listening, but I was also looking it up. Amanda Tapping, her first child was born in 2005.
Really?
So not when this was going on. However, and I put this out, Amanda Tapping has apparently had several interviews, articles about dealing with this. So I'm not just throwing stuff out that she's never talked about. Apparently, prior to that child being born, she suffered 8 miscarriages.
Wow.
And had a lot of trouble
conceiving.
Yeah. So I don't know how soon that started for her, but this is 1997. So we're only talking about 7-8 years. Presumably she could have very well been experiencing that here. That might've been what she was tapping into, but regardless, I have to say if I could just comment on that, until this episode, till this watch through, I've never really appreciated Amanda Tapping's acting performance in this episode. I love Amanda Tapping. Mm-hmm. She's a great actress. So many times we're going to catch really good spots from her. I've also said I skip this episode as often as I possibly can. You now understand why.
Yeah.
Man, her acting in this episode, just off the wall.
So good.
So good.
And it makes sense, though. I think, you know, I've never experienced the loss of a child through a miscarriage.
Yeah.
But I have friends who have. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, it is devastating.
Devastating, yeah.
I have a really dear friend who, similar, I think she had 3 miscarriages before she conceived her child. Mm-hmm. And It was a rough pregnancy, and so her son is going to be her only child that she has. But they actually had funerals for the babies that you know didn't make it.
Yeah,
I could definitely, like, even if it was just one miscarriage for her, I could see her having that you know, to tap into. Oh man,
yeah,
so well done. This was a powerful episode. I enjoyed it. I've got some other like science things that were cool. You know, like basically the Gould weaponizing Earth bacterias and things like that. Not afraid to plant a kid with a bomb.
Lots of cool high concept stuff.
Yeah. Great episode. This made me feel. I do think, though, like I want to acknowledge, and this will probably come up when I rank this episode. While you're talking about your sci-fi messages, I'm going to consider this. But if I watched this episode before I was a father, I don't know that I would have had the impact that it had for me.
So I first saw this episode when I was a father and I hated it.
Yeah.
It was an awful episode. Not because of the whole kid stuff and parent stuff. I just didn't like the episode.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because I mean, it's a kid and the kid's a bomb and oh my gosh, like whatever.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I hate to say it, it was boring to me.
Yeah.
And it went to all those emotional places that I didn't have a frame of reference for.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't relate to this. I can't be there because
I haven't been there,
but I was also too young to understand that. I was just, this is an awful episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Watching this now, there was a point, Jeff, in watching this episode, I had to turn away.
Yeah.
Like I needed a second.
Because it's so heavy,
so visceral, and I still hate this episode. I might appreciate it a little bit more now, but I still I don't handle kid episodes well when they do stuff like this, man.
Understandable.
Like it's awful. So.
I get not liking it because of the kid thing, but I feel like the Gould stuff and the lore stuff in this was fascinating. Like whenever they jumped to Jack and Teal'c on the planet doing the telescope stuff, when they saw that it was Nirti coming, like I found that stuff really compelling. And then even like, and again, it might just be because I'm coming in after the movie without seeing it, but learning more about the Stargates. Like I feel like this episode was super centered on the relationship between Sam and Cassandra.
Yeah.
But they had enough other stuff. The side dishes they had laid on the table this one were compelling enough that someone could still really enjoy the episode without connecting with that storyline.
It's amazing to me, as someone who's been through the show so many times, hearing like, you're just now meeting Nakwita. I thought everybody knew it was made out of Naquita. Like, that's so, that's common knowledge, right? Like, that is, I'll take Stargate for a dollar, Alex.
Wow.
That's how common that is. You know, Nirti being the goddess who does what she does, like, Jack actually being pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
I think at this point, I am starving for more information about the Gould and their culture and their physiology and their technology.
Yeah.
Because really, in all of these episodes, we've gotten moments of Gould stuff.
Yeah.
I think Bloodlines went the deepest, you know, into stuff for us. And that was a great episode. I really liked that episode. Yeah. But yeah, I think at this point, I am always going to be excited when we dive deeper into the Gould world, which makes me eager for you to dive deeper into what sci-fi messages you found in Singularity.
I am absolutely astounded at how you just came up with that transition. That was amazing.
Kind of a master.
Well done.
It's fine. It's fine. Well, I mean, done. I'm humble too.
I got to be honest. I'm sitting here. I was watching this episode, forgot that that's what I was looking for.
Really?
This is the first time truly. I mean, when I say I skipped this episode, Jeff, I really skip this episode every time. Like, I do not watch this episode. So it's been a while since I've seen this one. And I was relatively engrossed by the episode that I forgot to look.
I love that. I love that.
And so I don't have it. The worst thing I could say, or the best thing that I was having this thought as you were just speaking, is you remember the TNG episode, I, Borg?
Yes.
With Hugh.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the conversation in Star Trek about the ethics of using a being as a Trojan horse, as a bomb to go back to your spot.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately they decided not to do it. They freed Hugh. They let him go back. And
led to the descent two-parter and a bunch of other bad stuff. Yeah, it didn't turn out so well. So maybe not the best choice, but still the ethical choice.
But we also caught up with Hugh so many years later in Picard, and actually, you know, he and Jerry Ryan should have had their roles switched of what happened to them, but that's okay.
A lot of shouldas in Picard.
We'll talk about that later. Yeah. I'm still a fan of the show. You're not.
Not
it's okay.
So much.
Yeah. Anyway, this showed the other side of, like, what would happen if you actually did that. And actually, I think back to up the TNG idea of, if you're going to do that, that objectively makes you evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because they used a little girl that was purely innocent to put her through this, to turn her into a bomb. That is awful. That is awful, awful, awful. I am now forced to ask the question, run it through the litmus test. Does that hold up a mirror to society? Are there places that use kids like that? And probably I would say yes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Definitely they do. So that is just, I don't think it's necessarily a message as much just a reinforcing of how awful that is.
Yeah.
To do something like that. Does it give us hope for the future or tell us how to be better human beings? The only thing I could say with being a better human being, the moment that Sam walked away and shut the door and stood and stared at Cassandra, like that was awful.
Mm-hmm.
Sam turning around and going back was great. I just knew she wasn't going to explode. Awful. So
yeah,
I feel bad giving this episode any Chevron rating because I literally forgot to watch for those things and I don't really have it, but I could certainly be talked into like one or two.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes episodes are just there to be the episodes
and
to tug at their heartstrings. So
I feel like there was one moment in this one, somebody said something. Clearly, I'm prepared for this moment. Somebody said something.
Because you're supposed to be you're the one supposed to be watching for the messages of the show.
Exactly. Well, this is my thought process. I'm like, that's going to be good. I'm not going to write it down, though, because Brent's got this.
Yeah.
And so I don't remember what it was. But there was something that was like, there's something there. But I think it would be similar to this. And it was like, it was a moment. It was a line. And it's like, that's cool. It's a thing. But it's not the intent of the show, of the writer. It's not the thing that pervaded the episode.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to I think the ethical choice, we're talking about ethics here, would be to not give it a Chevron rating because he didn't give it the analysis.
Yeah. So I'm going to officially not give it zero Chevrons.
Yeah, it's a nil.
I'm not giving it zero Chevrons. And somebody's going to email, how could you give this one no Chevrons? I literally just said, folks, I want to be really clear.
Crystal clear.
I'm not giving it zero chevrons.
It just has none.
I think it's just there.
It's just there.
Yeah. It would be unfair of me to do that. But Jeff, you don't get to get out of this one so easily. You, my friend, get the choice of ranking this one and putting it into the ranking of SG1. I think you're probably going to place this one a lot higher than I would initially, and probably even still today. Our current top five, Jeff, is the Torment of Tantalus, number two, the Nox, number three, Cold Lazarus, four, Brief Candle, and five, Bloodlines. And then there's the whole bottom side. Regardless though, Jeff, talk us through, where are you placing this one in our ranking of SG1 season one?
When I was given my first time reaction to this, I mentioned I'm going to think about this when you're giving your sci-fi message, because as a parent, as a father, I definitely watched this through a certain lens.
Yeah.
This is my ranking, right? It's what it means to me. But I wanted to balance that with what would this episode mean to a not parent? Because I think that's the target demographic. When this show came out, they probably weren't necessarily looking at dads.
Yeah.
They were looking for like those later teen kind of people to hopefully are waiting to have kids, in my personal opinion.
Well, it was on Showtime, so somebody's got to pay for the $17.99 a month.
Well, every company's just out for mom and dad's money. That's how it works. Right. So I considered that, and here's where I said, or I started. I started, where in relationship to Cold Lazarus am I going to put this?
Oh, yeah.
That's where I started.
Yeah.
Then that thought of what does this mean to someone who's not a parent, brought it down a little bit. I probably honestly pushed it out of the top five at that point. But you said one thing in your sci-fi review that we talked a little bit about during the episode that is a really important factor in how I rank this episode.
Yeah.
Sam is holding Cassandra in that vault.
Yeah.
And she says to her, I have to go. I'm going to go up and I'm going to close the door. She gets out. She walks out and starts closing it. And Cassandra's like, whoa, what's going on?
I didn't realize you're on the other side of the door.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sam digs deep, right? She shows real courage, real strength and fortitude. She shuts that door. She seals it. She stops. She goes into the elevator and she's like, here we go. Nope. Can't do it. Can't do it. I'm going back. I'm going. And it's like, yes, yes. I don't want you to die, but this is the right thing to do. And she goes and she holds her and we watch the countdown and nothing happened. Oh my gosh. She was willing to sacrifice herself to not let this kid be alone.
Yeah.
But then we find out it's because she knew she wasn't going to blow up.
She reasoned it out. She just had a gut instinct that she wasn't going to blow up. So it was okay.
Sucked all the wind out of the moment.
Really did.
It really did. Honestly, that one thing kind of killed this episode for me.
Mm.
To the point that this, Brent, is going to be our new number 10. Right under Thor's hammer.
All right. So I did the top five. Here's where we are. Our next top five then are The Broken Divide, Children of the Gods, Enigma, because we watched that one before this one. Yep. Thor's hammer. And then you're placing Singularity, pushing down Fire and Water, Enemy Within, First Commandment, Hathor, and Emancipation. Jeff, let me ask you a question. We have talked about this for the last couple of weeks, how there really seems to be this sharp divide between here are some amazing episodes, here's some really good, strong episodes, and then here's the bad episodes.
Yeah.
And that line has been right at Fire and Water, right above. Mm-hmm. We're going to place Fire and Water right below the not really that good of an episode. Is Singularity finding it? Which side of the line is Singularity finding itself on?
I feel like, so we have 15 episodes ranked here, and I feel like that same divide happens and it's evenly split. Uh-huh. Your top five are incredible.
Yeah.
Your middle five are good to okay.
Yeah.
And the bottom five, if I never see them again or hear their titles, I'll be in good shape.
Fair enough. Well, Jeff, that's going to do it for us for Singularity. Finally, however many hours later it took us to get this particular episode in due to technology. Next time we are watching an episode. Okay. You're going to have to make a guess as to what this is.
Okay.
This is a made up alien word that you'll find out what it means when you watch the episode.
Okay.
The name is Korai.
Korai?
What is Korai? It is the Korai. Welcome to Korai. Or is it a person? Or is it a what? Korai.
Korai is an athletic. No, it's a combat sports.
Okay.
Thing. It's like it's their kumite.
Okay.
So they're going to go to this. I'll go with kumite. I was going to bring up TKO from Babylon 5. I won't. I'm going to keep this a Stargate podcast.
Mm-hmm.
they're going to go to this planet and it's going to be like this warrior culture sort of a thing.
Yep.
Where all the stuff is worked out in the Korai. We're going to go do that. And it's going to come down. We're going to end up. Well, it's, I always do this. I'm like, it's going to be this character, but no, I was thinking, oh, it's going to be Teal'c, but they're probably going to recognize him as Jaffa and be like, no, 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 it's not going to be you. It would be most awkward and have the most drama in the show if it's Daniel. Daniel's going to.
If you want things that are awkward in the show, it's Daniel.
Yeah, 100%.
Sure. Yeah.
So Daniel's going to have to go into the Korai and defend SG-1 in some way.
Like a, like in an arena.
Yeah, he's going to fight.
Yeah, yeah,
this
yeah.
is his, you know, Tsunkatse. This is all the right. Kumite. This, all those.
I will tell you this. This is an episode that I feel pretty much every sci-fi show does at some point in the run. Deep Space Nine did it in season one.
Okay.
The game we're going to play next time is what episode from Deep Space Nine is this episode being.
That's going to test my mettle. I usually skip the first season of Deep Space Nine.
I think you might not. Well, we'll find out next time right here on Stargate SG-1 for the first time. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Wherever you're catching us, whether it's on Patreon, YouTube, audio podcast of your choice, Spotify, Audible, all those sorts of places, wherever you are, please be sure to like, subscribe, leave a rating and review, share this with someone that you know that loves Stargate SG-1 or Stargate Atlantis, Stargate Universe, wants to see Stargate come back, or anyone who, like my friend Jeff, needs to be introduced to the series and they can do it right along with him. So that being said, until next time, hopefully we never see.
Hey, Brent.
Yes, Jeff.
I'm supposed to come up with something witty here, but frankly, in this episode, I got nothing.
You just did what I did with the thing.
Yep.
For crying out loud.